From JetBooks, this is Irish Business Builders, a show about great Irish businesses and the people who build them.
Because I think a lot of people start businesses but don't know how they run. They'll just get someone in to do this bit of the business, get someone in to do that bit of the business. They don't know how it works. Is it going to take you 10 minutes? Is it going to take you 10 hours? So I did everything at the start to figure it out.
I'm Conor Carney, and that's the voice of Gary Fox from Host Butlers and the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast. Host Butlers is a property management service for Airbnb rentals here in Dublin. After a steady start in 2015, the Irish Times picked up on a story of Airbnb and the new trend towards short-term lettings over hotel stays, and the rest, as they say, is history. Gary ran Host Butlers successfully for 5 years, up until recently when the coronavirus pandemic destroyed the market for travel, tourism and short-term lettings. But Gary has spent his downtime wisely, focusing his attention on his other project, the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast, a weekly business podcast that shares the journeys, insights and business lessons from Ireland's most interesting entrepreneurs. In this conversation, Gary talks about bootstrapping businesses, the benefits of constraints, hiring staff, and what it's like to lose a business overnight. I started out by asking Gary about Host Butlers and how he got started.
Host Butlers is a short-term management and corporate accommodation concierge service, which sounds like a mouthful. So basically, we help landlords do Airbnb or do corporate rentals. It started 5.5, nearly 6 years ago now. I was in the States. I was using Airbnb. We were using Airbnb everywhere. We did the Run with the Bulls in Pamplona, did it there. And I was like, God, this is so, because we couldn't get a hotel. We left it like last minute. I was like in Barcelona and we saw like, this was on. I was like, oh, I'd love to do that. I was like, I'm going to go do that. It was like one of those spur of the moment things. Like, oh, it's on like in 2 days. We'll go do it. No hotels. We got like a room in someone's house. And Michelle was like, that sounds a bit creepy. I was like, no, that's Airbnb. It's cool. We'll do it. So we did it. It was brilliant. And then we just kept doing it in different places. Went to the States and it was everywhere. It was everywhere there. We went to Washington. It was there. New York. It was there. And I was like, this is class. And we had different experiences. Some of them was really good. Some was really bad. In Washington, it was really creepy. We went down to like the back of your man's house into his basement. I was like, yeah, this is a bit creepy. But it was fine. You know, he just had a lockbox, but it was just poorly communicated and he was at work and blah, blah, blah. So I was like, oh, there must be better ways of doing it. Looked up and saw there was management companies in the States doing it. The companies who help you do it if you're at work or you lived somewhere else. So I was like, okay, started exploring that, looked up what they were doing. And I started a website. I was like, right, I'm going to do it while I'm doing my own job. Did it in the evenings, the weekends, the typical cliche. And launched it. I was like, right, if I can get a couple of clients, I'll do it as a weekend job and just test it.
What would a client be, like what would you be doing for them?
So everything about Airbnb, you would take over their profile and you'd be doing communications, you'd be messaging the guests. So that's it, Connor, you're coming to my house in Galway. You'd book with me, you'd be like, oh, cool, does it have like a hot tub? I'd be messaging back on behalf of the guest. And I'd always go, look, I'm Gary, I help Jack with his Airbnb. So I would meet the guest, I would show them where everything is, do some sort of welcome pack, like croissants or biscuits or scones or whatever. I'd be the point of contact while they were there. And then when they left, I would check them out. So our cleaners would come, I'd find a cleaner would clean the place, get it ready for the next guest. Or if Jack lived there, he'd be coming back and it'd be ready for him again. So everything really.
So you started off and you were doing most of the work?
Everything, literally everything. Because it was just an idea. I was like, right, I'm going to build this website. I was kind of following all the principles of like bootstrapping and, you know, lean startup and, you know, just testing ideas. Just, I want to test this idea. I'd done a startup previously and it was the cliched, get funding, go into an accelerator program, try get more funding, get government funding. And it was just like everything I didn't want to do. Mm-hmm. I'd learned I hated that whole process of like being reliant on other people. I was like, I'm going to always want to work for myself. I have since I was 15. I was like, I'm going to go back to what I know. And what I know is buying something for €1, selling it for €2. I think a lot of businesses forget about that. Mm-hmm. So I went back, did that with Host Builders. I was like, right, very simple cost structure. I'm going to be the only cost, really. I did a lot of cleaning at the start just to figure it out. Because I think a lot of people start businesses but don't know how they run. They'll just get someone in to do this bit of the business, get someone in to do that bit of the business. They don't know how it works. Is it going to take you 10 minutes? Is it going to take you 10 hours? So I did everything at the start to figure it out. I wasn't a fantastic cleaner, but I soon started getting people in going, okay, I need you to clean this apartment. It should take you an hour and a half. It's got this many bed, this many linen. You know, you have to understand the nuts and bolts of the business. So I did everything at the start. For me, it was just a test. It was a test going, will this work? And if it works, will it scale?
You got your first few clients. Mm-hmm. How did you get your first few customers?
That was, again, I was just testing it. So like, right, how can I test it? So I built a website on Squarespace. And then I was like, right, I'm going to put some Facebook ads. And it was around the time when the Web Summit was still in RDS. I was like, right, that's going to be the launch weekend. I'm going to put targeted ads around. I dropped a pin on the RDS and put it in a, I think it was a 5K radius, because there was loads of Airbnb properties around there anyway. And that's where most of them were. I'd researched, okay, Airbnb in Dublin, where are they? Who's doing it? Dropped a pin around the RDS and said, right, people are doing it. Might just be doing it for the RDS. They might just be doing it for the Web Summit, because it was such a bonanza for people at the time. And I was like, right, they might want to do it, but then they might want to keep going, but not do it themselves, because it's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. It's a ton of work. So I was like, right, I'm going to do that. So I got one guy, Barry, now a good mate of mine. I got him. He was in Ranelagh. He was like, oh yeah, I want to set this up. So I went, literally didn't know what I was doing. Luckily, he was such a nice guy. Came in, I was like, oh yeah, we can do that. Yeah, we can do that. We can do that. And I literally took the keys from him and figured it out. And we got a couple of clients from the Web Summit. And then after that, kept going with him and just kept doing the ads. They were effective to a point, but they helped us get the first couple of clients anyway. And from that, then we did PR mainly.
How did you price it initially?
I copied everything from the States. Everything. There's nothing wrong with looking at someone who's figured it out. I literally looked at it, contacted them all, especially in London. I went to, because London's our closest market, I was like, emailed them going, hey, I have a flat in Ealing, two bed, how does this work? And they would tell me, and I'd get on calls with them. Yeah, that's how I did it. I just literally looked at what was out there and kind of went, I'll just copy that.
Copy and paste.
Pretty much. There's, you know, people have spent a lot of money. Generally, whatever business you're doing, bigger businesses and more established ones will have spent a lot of money figuring out where the price point is. Now look, you can always go down or go back up, but yeah, that's kind of how I learned it.
What about PR? How effective was that for you?
That was everything, being honest. That was everything. That was the cornerstone of the business to start with. Then it was replaced by word of mouth, because we did such a good job for existing clients. They knew people who knew people who knew people, but PR at the start was huge.
For someone like me who doesn't really understand PR, how does it work? Someone sees a story about you in the newspaper, sees what you do, and all of a sudden you're getting emails and phone calls?
Exactly. It's just that simple, Connor. And no, look, I had a bit of a background in journalism, photojournalism. I worked in that space for a while, so I knew what was interesting. Airbnb was super hot. Airbnb was super interesting. It was this cool new startup that was helping people make money from their spare rooms, and the narrative was brilliant. It has to be a good story. Like if people ask me a lot about, you know, how do I get coverage for my business? Is it interesting? Is your business interesting? What's the story? No one wants to hear about, you know, company launches new product. No one cares. Company launched a new product that would help people do what? Because they've been suffering from what? Do you know, no one cares about your product. Mm-hmm. It's what it does for someone, or how, you know, it solves their problem or makes them money. So for me, it was very easy. It was, Connor's got a 2-bed apartment in Dublin somewhere. I almost said where it was there. Connor's got a 2-bed apartment in Dublin. He's going away for the weekend. He can now earn money thanks to HostBuilders. We do everything. He goes off, enjoys Westport for the weekend. We come in, he gets Airbnb guests, pays for his break in Westport. It was a very simple narrative. And I knew kind of how PR worked. I knew certain journalists, and I just approached them. I was like, look, here's the story. Here's what I'm doing. And loved it because it was topical.
Would it be the case that an article would come out and you would suddenly see an influx of inquiries?
There was one article that was the cornerstone of our business. I can point to that and go, yes, that article made our business. I was featured in the Irish Times. We were on the front page in the top masthead, and we were second page in the business section, the entire page. And that cemented the business. We were literally getting going. Like, we were taking off. We were getting a client here, just through graft, through literally me working 16-hour days, just grafting. And then that came out. I vividly remember, this is such a cliche, but I vividly remember going down, I was living in Stepside at the time, I went down to the local shop, into the centre, looked at it, went, holy shit, this is amazing. And by the time I got back to my apartment, a company had rang me to partner with them. Like, literally, the phone rang so many times that day, because being in a publication like the Irish Times, it cements it, because that's your validation. If you're in the Irish Times, people think, well, Gary's got it figured out. Gary is, you know, he's not a mass murderer. You know, he's got a good business.
Yeah.
You know, the Irish Times have vetted him and they've judged it worthy of being featured in the Irish Times, which is still, people overlook traditional media, but to people of a certain age, if you're in Irish Times, you know, the Indo to a lesser extent, you know, the Sunday Times, the Business Post, if you're in those pinnacle publications, that's a kind of validation of your business and of you.
And what if someone doesn't, does it last for much longer after the article comes out? Or are you kind of getting a big spike in customers?
We again? Still get clients from that Irish Times article. That was
that
4 years ago. People Google Airbnb Management Dublin, or they Google sometimes HostBullers, but mainly Airbnb Management Dublin. The Irish Times has such good SEO and appears so high, always on Google rankings, that it's still, I think we're number 2 and that's number 3 or 4. So essentially it allowed us to buy a piece of the front page of Google. So like, we still get people ringing us going, and I always ask, this is one of the biggest tips I have for small businesses, is ask every single client where they came from. Go, where did you hear about us? Such a simple question. But people spend thousands on marketing, but never ask the person, was it a flyer? Was it Google? Was it SEO? Was it PR? Was it word of mouth? And then you can double down on that. Whatever that is, then keep doubling down. For us, it was the Irish Times and word of mouth.
Let's say for that article, how many people did you have working for you at that time?
You're looking at them.
So it was a one-man band, essentially?
Yeah.
You're in the Irish Times, so you look blue-chip to everyone who's,
yeah,
who's read it.
I got my missus to come down with me to Grand Canal and take a photo in front of the Samuel Beckett.
Mm-hmm.
That stereotypical photo. I used to do photojournalism, so I was like, okay, we're going to set this up. We nearly had a war. Me trying to like set it up, I'd run back. I'd be like, okay, take it like that. I was like, no. Take it like this. And so I send in the photo and everything. So people think, oh, you're in the Irish Times. It must be some fancy photo shoot thing. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes like used by the imagery. I genuinely thought it would be a little sidebar, a little tiny caption at the bottom. You know, sometimes you see those little in brief, news in brief. I thought that's what it would be. And people don't really understand that either. I had no concept of it being a full page because you don't know. They don't know. They don't know, is something going to happen? Are they going to bump you onto like a tiny slot? Is it going to be featured at all? So it was, there's no guarantees.
So how did you deal with the influx then of inquiries and new business?
It was fine. You scale up as appropriate. By then I'd kind of figured out, I had found a cleaning company and I'd partnered with them. They're a brilliant husband and wife team. And we still work with them to this day. That we were very lucky to find each other. Like, they were just starting, I was just starting, met for a coffee, got on. I built a very clean system. I knew exactly what I wanted. This is exact, and transparency is everything. Be super clear on what you want and find, only keep going until you find that person or company who will work with you and work within those parameters. So I was working with them. So that had taken half the work, if not more. And then the rest was just graft. The rest was just hours. And I didn't care because I was working for myself. I didn't care if I did 20 hours a day because I was just happy. It was working. It was kind of a input in, input out in terms of the more work I did, the more hours I did, the better the business grew. So it was a lovely business from that point of view. I hate kind of doing work and kind of going, is this working? You've always done projects whereby you're like, oh, I'm putting in a lot of hours, but I don't know if I'm going in the right direction, especially when you're starting. Whereas this was, you know, I do this work, the client arrived, the client left. It was very binary. It was lovely in terms of, as a business, it was very nice. Get a new client, that's a new property. Okay, that means an extra probably 3 to 4 guests a week. You know, it was all pretty numerical and everything broken down because you had to, when you're on your own, you have to have every hour accounted for.
So I suppose there's two sides of the business then. There's the client who is the landowner, the landowner or whatever.
Yeah, the landlord, yeah.
Yeah, landlord. And then you obviously have to, is it up to you to rent out their apartment and to actually get it to capacity?
We did everything for them. So we put it on Airbnb for them.
And optimize their Airbnb page.
Exactly, do everything. So we do the photos. again, I had the background in photography, so very lucky. I'd be able to do really good photos. I'd stage it. I'd, you know, make it look beautiful. But we'd do everything. Like, we would go, okay, the majority of the time we were setting up the Airbnb profile for them. They wouldn't have an Airbnb profile. So we'd, you know, do the whole lot. We'd write the description. We'd add in all the attractions. We'd write the guidebook. Now that I'm talking about now, it sounds like a lot of work. But, you know, you just, you're excited as well. It's early doors. And you just create systems. Like, you create systems for everything. You know, whatever you're doing, never replicate. You know, if you're going to be doing this all the time, don't keep reinventing the wheel. Just create a template for each thing. And as soon as I started seeing the patterns, I just created templates for every single step. So that if I went to get a new client, okay, new client. Okay, here's the template for the guest book. Okay, add in all the details. Okay, here's the template for this. Add in all the details. And just, it allows you to, like, it's becoming more popular now because you've so many software solutions and you've so many, I used to use Excel spreadsheets, well, Google spreadsheets for everything. Whereas now you can have software packages and it kind of allows you to do a lot of the heavy lifting. But
so you're putting in systems and processes to make it predictable.
Yeah.
So then it's very easy to train people up.
In theory, yeah. It's very easy in your head. It always gets stuff out of your head because there's nothing worse when you're a small business owner. I'm sure you know it yourself. A lot of it's in your head. You just know. You just know because you've done it 1,000 times. Whereas if you're trying to explain to someone going, oh, you do this, then you do that, then you open that tab and you copy and paste it from there. So I had systems, but then when I started hiring people, I had to build better ones, build more transparent ones, clearer ones, simpler ones. Because a lot of it was like, I could just do it in my sleep. A lot of it was me on my phone running around the city going, picking up the laundry. Okay, now I'm going here. And then when they're bang, I'd be writing back to people on Airbnb on my phone. And I'd be, you know, I was doing it all myself. Like, so for the first first 14 months, 15 months, 16 months, I was on my own.
And was it a big jump then to hire someone?
It was, yeah, it was. But then when I found someone, I literally don't know how I did it on my own. You know, that kind of way. It's like we talked about earlier, you adjust to anything. Like, you adjust to absolutely every situation. But then when I found someone to work with me, it was just magic. Like, it wasn't without its challenges. Like, we hired a good few people over the last couple of years. Some worked, some didn't. But when you find someone good, Rafa actually is still with me. She still works with me now. We were only at lunch there last week. We were just talking about it. When you find someone good, it just changes everything. It changes how you view the business. It changes your life. Like, I had no life for 2 years, literally. This was, and again, it sounds cliche saying it now, but it's true. Like, you just become part of the business. It is you. And I never minded because I just wanted to work for myself.
Do you think bootstrapping was a part of that? Was part of you keeping ownership over the business and having something that was truly yours?
Yeah, I had done the funding thing, and you've no control. You've control, but no control in terms of you're just waiting for the next funding round. You're just waiting for the next grant. You're just waiting for this. It was rubbish. I knew whatever I did next would be me. If I put in X hours, I would get this out. Very simple. And I overdid it because I didn't hire someone for 15, 16 months. So I was burning myself out, and I probably should have hired someone after 6. But I was so paranoid about making it work and so paranoid that I had to have a buffer in my head. I always wanted this buffer of, like, worst case scenario, a VAT bill, a tax bill, an unexpected problem, you know, a margin issue. You know, I see the biggest problem with a lot of new businesses, the margins are too low. They try to be the cheapest. They try to be, you know, but I can get by on this. I'm like, it's not about getting by. It's about building a business that, you know, will sustain any sort of minor shock, because they'll come in some way. You'll make a mistake, or you'll miscalculate something. I know, as an accountant now, you're probably looking at me going, no, you should never miscount. But I was like, I need a buffer. And I was paranoid about having a very stable business before I became responsible for someone else. Because when you hire someone, you're responsible for them. And I take a very serious view on it in terms of you're responsible for their livelihood, and that's a big part of their life. So I only wanted to hire someone when I knew I wouldn't be turning around to them in 2 months going, sorry, we're not doing as well as I thought we were. You know, because I see people hire, people look at hiring as like this benchmark of success, and I hate it because it's like, oh, look, we've hired 40 people. You're like, that's great, but you don't see 6 months down the line when they've let go 30, because they just, it's almost like a vanity thing. It's a vanity number. You know, you see people and you see companies doing press releases. We're 40 people now. And you're like, what's your turnover? and what's your profit and your margin? So yeah, for me, it was all about like stable and slow, which is very unsexy, but that's what it was all about.
I want to ask basically about saying no to potential business that isn't going to get you the margin that you need in order to grow your business and to have enough. I mean, did that ever come up?
Yeah, I made all the mistakes. I said yes to all the business because I was just trying to learn. You don't know what's the good business and what's the bad business, and a bad client will drain you. Drain you of money, drain you of your spirit, drain you of your joy, and they take up 10x what a good client will. But I took on everybody. I was like, yep, we can do that. Yep, we can do that. Yep, we can do that. And any kind of property in terms of, you know, oh, it's in like Dunleary. Cool. Yeah, no problem. It's in Sandymount. Grand. No bother. It's up, you know, IFSC. Perfect. So you hone down, and I got more selective, and I would only take on people who, A, I felt had the right connection with me in terms of, I don't mean like a soulmate kind of connection, but like as in, I like them. As in, they're good people. What are you doing Airbnb for? You know, I had people, like greedy people come to me with like 8 beds in a 2-bed apartment. And I was like, no, that's not what we do. Good luck yourself doing it, but that's not what we do, because that's what has ruined Airbnb, especially in Dublin, is people have been greedy, cramming them in, putting them in apartment blocks where they're not suitable. So for us, I kind of soon learned, okay, that works, that doesn't work. And it's experience as well. You learn, you have more experience with people. You kind of go, I had a landlord like him before. That's not going to work. He has unrealistic expectations about what he wants. I'd always say, what do you want to do this for? Is it for the money? Is it for the freedom? Is it for the flexibility? And once I knew they're on the same page, then I'd be like, cool, we're going to, because the majority of my clients have been with me since the start. Like, I'm very rarely do I lose a client in inverted commas in terms of they just walk away, because I kind of vet intensively at the start and then we work together, because I don't want people ringing me every week going, what's happening? Did you see the message? And at the start I did. I was too flexible. I'd be like, okay, no problem. I'll get back on that. You know, because they felt like they were like a hotelier in their head. They were like running this hotel now, when it isn't like that at all. It's a business relationship. And I just, once I got them to go, right, you're trusting us. We know what we're doing, and they were hands off. So yeah, a bad client is a terrible choice.
So do you think that setting expectations at the start was a big thing?
You get the client you deserve. Mm-hmm. I said that to you earlier when we were having a chat about something else. You get the client you deserve. Because if you're sloppy and slapdash and you do the whole kind of Irish, ah, sure, yeah, it'd be grand, sure, look, we'll get going and we'll see what'll happen. No, because you'll get bad guests. If your property is poorly presented, you know, you don't have good rules, you don't have good procedures, you don't have a good experience. We'd meet every single guest, and from the minute we met them, we had won them a good time. Okay, well, warm welcome. This is what we're doing. This is your apartment. This is the Wi-Fi. Here's your guidebook. Everything was broken down, and these are the places. And we did like a nice little recommendation for every single place. This is my favorite cafe within 200 meters here. This is the pub I think is really good. This is the restaurant I think is really good. And like, those little things matter. Like, how you do anything is how you do everything. I believe that to my core, and that's how I approach the business. Everything was done to a certain standard, and then your clients are a certain standard, your guests are a certain standard, and you just try to maintain that always.
Thinking back, like, you probably had loads of mistakes, or you probably made loads of mistakes related and everything else. What do you think might have been the biggest mistake you made?
I probably talked about it already, is we waiting too long to hire someone. Because I was running with the red light on. I was literally, and I was probably handicapping the business by not giving it that space to grow, because I was just too involved in everything. I was doing every single check-in. I remember one check-in, I had 18 check-ins. So that's 18 people. So we 30-minute time slots. Like, that's insane. It's ridiculous. Like, you know, and then you'd have clients who just wouldn't turn up, and I was very flexible at the start, check in whenever, and I had people like arrive at 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. I'm lying there on the couch on my phone kind of going, oh my god, what am I doing? Get home at like 4 a.m. and you know, and people would treat you really poorly. Like, they'd have no, because I used to get really annoyed. Like, they didn't even say thanks. Like, I was lying on the couch at 3 a.m. Sure, it's not their job to say thanks. Like, it's like going to a hotel. People equated it to a hotel. You don't go in and go, oh my God, front desk, I'm so happy you're still here. It's just, at the start, people kind of equated it. Now, as Airbnb grew and evolved, people kind of saw it to be more than that. And we set very specific rules, end up going, check-in before 10, check-in after 10 is done in a different way. So I think the biggest mistake was not hiring someone sooner.
Would you equate that to your biggest learning then from the experience?
There's a lot of learnings, a ton, like literally I'm learning every single day, and you have to be, and that's what I love, work for yourself, is always learning. And that'd be one of them. Definitely the bootstrapping element as well. That done well is a beautiful business model, because the control I have is absolute, because I'm fully responsible for its success and its failure. You know, if I do well, I benefit. If I do poorly, the downside occurs. So I just... both of those, I think.
Did the bootstrapping ever frustrate you in terms of not being, and maybe the margins are very good in the business, but you're in a way constrained by the lack of funding and only being able to use customers' money and everything else? Was that ever a frustration?
No, because there's a beauty in constraint. Constraint makes you work better. I think we have way too much choice now. I get paralyzed by this as well. You've choices of everything now. We have abundant choice. It used to be like information is rare, and now information is everywhere. You're swimming in it, and you're swimming in choice. Whereas when you're constrained, it focuses you so much. Like, I was never as focused as in the first 2 years of the business, when I knew every single thing I had to do, every single decision, because I would pull this lever and this would happen. So it was brilliant, and it suited my personality. You have to know what you're suited to. I was not suited to the big business, getting funding of a million and then doing something else. I was never suited to that. I know friends of mine who are doing that, and they're perfectly suited to it. That is their personality to a T. So you have to know, and that only comes with experience. That comes with knowing who you are as a person, how you operate best. I operate best when I know if I just work hard, I will get the result.
How has COVID affected the business?
Hugely. Massively. We're both grinning. Hugely. Because literally we were getting a little bit of blowback from regulations as well. So we were literally in the middle of, it couldn't happen at a worse time, because we were literally in the middle of trying to pivot our business from short stay Airbnbs to medium stay to corporate. So moving up kind of like 14-day, 30-day stays. And we're doing quite well with that, because it's essentially a new business model. And we're just in the middle of moving to that. We still had Airbnb traditional, but we're also moving towards an executive model. And then COVID happened. So our big season would be from the week before Paddy's Day to the first weekend in October. That was our big season. That's when we would do the majority of our revenue, and we'd be busy. Like, every single day you'd be busy. And March was just happening. And the weekend before Paddy's Day, just for the rugby, actually, the Italy thing, we were like, should we cancel those bookings? Because we had a lot of Italians coming over, and we're like, might should have to cancel those bookings. And then you couldn't have foreseen it. Because I remember thinking, this is a real stinger. This is going to hit us for 2 weeks now. I remember thinking back, going, if we lose Paddy's Day, we're in big trouble here. Mm-hmm. Because Paddy's Day is Christmas times 10 for us, in terms of everywhere it was booked. And then there's a rollover effect of either weekend, because the majority of our guests are American coming for Paddy's Day. So you got the rollover, basically the whole of March is great business. But then I was like, oh, if we lose Paddy's, now we're in big trouble. I remember we started losing Paddy's. And then when the air ban was launched, or when the air ban was implemented, it was like literally someone just went lights off and everything stopped. Everything stopped. So all bookings stopped, and then there was just a torrent of cancellations, like literally hundreds of thousands of euro worth of cancellations overnight. And you're just trying to like figure out what's going on. You're trying to like deal with it. You're trying to like deal with the COVID effect yourself on yourself and your family, and lockdown, and trying to go to Aldi, and you know, all this madness going on. And like, even thinking back now, it feels like a long time ago, even though it's a couple of months, but it's been tough. Yeah, it's been super tough. The first month was extremely hard, because we were still in that period of like, some people were still coming, some people weren't. Then people were like, there was like a rolling thing whereby I remember the air ban was like, okay, now it's further, now it's further. And we were just dealing with like 2 week cancellations, okay, more cancellations. And then once the full ban came in, it was just like the whole summer was wiped out. So we are wiped out until September.
In a way, it's given you some time to focus on other activities. Mm. Tell me about the podcast. When did that start? And your focus on that now?
Yeah. So the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast started last March, 12 months. So what's that? 14, 15 months ago. And that was, for anyone not familiar with it, I would sit down. It's kind of evolved. It's like everything. It's kind of evolved. For me, initially, it was like a little kind of like audio diary about chronicling a new adventure and starting a new business, because I was going to, you know, Hostbullers was kind of doing well at the time. And I was like, right, okay, we need that. And we also need another revenue stream. So I was able to step back. Rafa and Claire were effectively managing the business. They were doing everything. And I'd kind of got to that level of, I trained them up so well and they were just so good that effectively I'd made myself irrelevant, which is what every business owner should strive to do. You should strive to make yourself, if you were gone in the morning for a month, everything's still fine. Gary's gone for a month, perfect. Because if, as a small business owner, you're so wrapped up in it, and you know, you are the blockage in terms of just ring Gary, you know, and no one got fired for ringing the boss to check something, you know what I mean? So I finally got to a place whereby I was like, right, I'm comfortable now. So I stepped away. So I wanted a new project. So I was like, right, I'm going to start the podcast. And I wanted a way of just meeting great people. I got quite insular in the last couple of years with the business, because you're just head down charge and you're like, I'm going to make this success. So I got kind of out of the network of like fellow entrepreneurs, fellow business people, because stopped learning, and that's always a terrible way to be. I was still reading and I was still consuming a lot of stuff, but I stopped active learning. I stopped. There's nothing like chatting to someone. Even like when we were chatting before this, like just that interaction, that like you pick up so much. Mm-hmm. You learn so much. So I wanted to meet great people. I wanted to build my own network. I wanted to build my own brand, essentially, in terms of who I am as a businessman and an entrepreneur. And it was just a way of learning. It's just a way of sitting down with someone every week for an hour and learning from the best entrepreneurs in Ireland. So it's like, it's a no-brainer. Like sometimes I don't even think anyone's listening, in terms of I never even imagine what it'll be like on the other end. Now, I don't want to do a bad podcast, but for me, as long as we're having a good chat, I know it's going to be interesting to other people.
It's two ways. You're getting a good chat. You're learning from some of the best business people out there. Yeah. But at the same time, you're producing content and you're building your own brand at the same time.
Yeah. I think content is going to be everything in the next couple of years. I think marketing will... It's moving that way already, but I think I was a huge fan of podcasts as it was. I was listening to all sorts of American podcasts. I just couldn't relate. I enjoyed them, but I enjoyed them in the same way as I enjoy watching Netflix and watching like The Last Kingdom or something. It was entertainment, as opposed to like, I can actually apply that to my business, because I see what Gary did there and he did that. And if I was able to get into the Irish Times, then I might be able to get a bit of exposure to my business. And I was just never able to relate to like, the guy who started Snap, or the guy, you know, interesting stories, great stories, but like so polished, polished to within an inch of their life. They all have the origin myth. Well, I was driving past a grain silo and I saw a grain thing and I thought, hey, I can turn a brewery in there. Like it's, you know, that's not how it happened. And I just got sick of it. I was like, you know what? There's no one really in Ireland doing good, practical, honest businesses. Cause like we're a nation of entrepreneurs. Like we don't call it that. Because the Irish thing, but like every shopkeeper, every publican, especially now, I think there's just a wave since like 2013, 2014, maybe since a recession actually, just a wave of entrepreneurs coming up, and they're just starting to bubble up now. They've kind of done 5-6 years of hard work and they're starting to bubble up.
What's the plan then for the podcast over the future? And I know you've got a blog online and everything else. Will you be pivoting into other business ventures from the podcast? Do you think it'll be a business in itself? What's the plan?
All of what you talked about there, I view it as like a 5-10 year project. I go, right, I'm going to do this for the next 10 years. I'm going to produce content for the next 10 years and it'll be the podcast. The podcast will be the core of it because I just believe in it so strongly. I couldn't tell you exactly. I couldn't say, Connor, in 2 years, I'm going to launch an online course because this is where I'm going. Mm-hmm. I just know something fantastic is going to come from it, because within 3 months of starting it, the feedback was so good. And like, not just from my mom, from everybody, you know, just like, you know, it was so good. I was getting so much from it in terms of, I was just like every single one, I enjoyed doing it. And when you suddenly kind of go, this actually isn't really enjoyable. This doesn't actually work. Mm. I really love doing it. And I picked entrepreneurship because I just love it. I love chatting to fellow entrepreneurs. I love chatting, learning how does a business work. And for me, I just love it. I love sitting down and chatting with you today because you're just learning and you're kind of going, oh, I could apply that to my own business. So it's a long-term project. And yes, whatever businesses I do next, well, the podcast isn't going to hurt. Do you know what I mean? If you have 1,000 people listening every week or every day and you've given them something for the last 200, 300, 400 episodes, there's an element of trust there. Mm-hmm. They know who I am. They know what I'm about. They know that I'm real. They know that this is my story. This is what I did. This is what I'm doing. This is what I think. And there's a connection. There's a very personal connection because I think a lot of business has gone the other way. Oh, automate this, automate that. Hello, chatbot. You know, a lot of it is very impersonal now. And I find that people are searching for a connection to, you know, a personality and a person. And even what you do in your own podcast, it just makes your business become more real. Mm-hmm. Well, the jet books, as Connor actually is mad into, like, you know, whatever it is, triathlons or whatever. And it's often the stuff you talk about after or before. Mm-hmm. I'll often be chatting to an entrepreneur and suddenly you're both mad into, like, you know, Tim Ferriss books, or you're both like, getting up at 6 a.m. or you both like Man United or whatever it is. There's a personal connection there. Like, you know, business is great and all, but it's all the other stuff around it. It's the person. It's what you do after you're finished business. It often makes more connection.
So talk to me a little bit about the difference between running a podcast type business,
yeah,
where you're the main attraction and probably doing a lot of the work,
mm-hmm,
versus something like Host Butlers, which was yourself and putting in systems and trying to get staff members on board to execute on those systems and processes. What are your thoughts on that?
It's a really good question, actually. How do they equate? They're very different, but the principles are the same. In terms of what I talked about earlier, is in like how you do anything is how you do everything. So I try to do a very good podcast every week, high production, great guest, someone I connect with. And then I kind of view it as like each one is an experiment in terms of, I like learning in terms of, right, what does well? If I do this episode and I do this, so like I did with Paul Galvin's episode, I did Facebook ads. I was like, okay, that works there. I've done LinkedIn ads for 1 week. It's a way for me to dabble in all sorts of like online learning about like Facebook ads, LinkedIn, Twitter, connecting with people online. What makes something not go viral? Because I haven't had anything go viral, but like what makes something do well and something not do well? Is it a personal thing? Is it how you distribute it? Is it how you chunk up the episodes? So for me, it's just a way of keeping sharp and learning how the online world works, because now more than ever, especially with COVID, I think now we all realize no matter what you do, you have to be an online business. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's just a way of keeping sharp and kind of going, right, this is how I'm going to grow. Because growing a podcast, same as growing a business. Mm-hmm. You know, your listeners are your customers. It's just a different way, different medium.
How many interviews have you done at this stage?
56. We're on episode 56 now.
Out of all those, is there anything that stands out as, you know, the one bit of advice maybe that you got that you've been able to implement in your own business, or maybe a particular guest that stands out?
It's funny you say that. I did a wrap-up episode about 4 or 5 episodes ago.
And yeah, I heard it.
The feedback from that was colossal.
And you summarized the one piece of advice basically from every episode.
Yeah. People loved it. People absolutely loved it.
And for people listening, it is actually an excellent way to get a taste of every single interview that you've done.
Mm.
Was there a lot of value added going back over the conversations and picking out the one thing?
Huge. Yeah, massive. I I thought it'd be a real easy episode to do. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, you know, I'd be really interested if I did like a quick summary of all of them. It took me 2 days. 2 full days of going back through them all, going, oh, that's really interesting. Oh, that's really interesting too. And I had like a fight with myself going, oh, they can only have one. Which should it be? It was brilliant because it refocuses your mind going, oh, they did that. And look, we talked about it briefly before. It's the fundamentals. I used to always be looking for the silver bullet. I'd always be going, what's the key here? What's the one gem that I can learn that will clinch it? And it's the same thing. Consistency. High performance over a very long period of time. That's essentially what it comes down to. Being very consistent over a very long period of time. And that's such a boring answer. Everyone's like, just tell me to do Facebook ads or just tell me to do Google. You know, everyone wants that one thing, and it's never one thing. It's always like, start. I get so many messages of people going, I have this business idea, but I don't know what to do next. I'm like, just start. Just start with the smallest, whatever you think it is, pare it back until it's almost embarrassingly small, until it's the smallest idea you can do. And can you reach 5 people with that? Because if you reach 5 people, then you have a business and then you can grow it. People are like, it's overwhelming. People are like, I have this brilliant business idea, but I need like 10 million in funding and I need like 10 staff. I was like, well, what if you did it as a service? Can you do your super duper SaaS product as a service? Can you physically go to someone's house and provide that service for them? And they're like, oh, I could, but, you know, I was like, whatever you want to do, just start. And that's probably the biggest, it's the one bit of advice, because you know, it's never linear. It's never like, I started this business, then a year later, I was doing the exact same thing and we're turning over 10 million. It's like, I started this business and we realized there wasn't actually, the money wasn't there. It was over there. We started this business and actually didn't turn out to be a cleaning business, turned out to be an Airbnb management business. You know, all this stuff, I did it myself. I started like, we would do everything. We would do check-ins, cleaning, drop-offs, everything. And then it was like, no, it's just Airbnb management business, just managing this. So it's just start and you'll figure it out on the way. If you're hungry enough and you have the will to do it, starting, because it'll take you way longer. It'll take you 3 times longer and it'll be 3 times more expensive. That's probably an underestimation.
You make half as much money as you thought.
Exactly. But you know what? Do you really want it? It'll show you if you really want it. I think a lot of people think they really want it, but it's only when you start, you're like, yeah, this is what I really want. If you're happy doing it when you're making very little cash, but you're working like a demon, because you know that's what you want to do.
Gary, where can people find you online? Do you want people to find you online?
I definitely do. I want them to subscribe and listen to the podcast. So it's the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast. You can get that anywhere. Mm-hmm. Spotify, all that usual thing. Haven't got our Spotify deal yet. Yeah, it's on Spotify, iTunes. They can find me. Probably the best place is to go to my website, mrgaryfox.com. So it's mrgaryfox.com. And then you can get the podcast there. You can listen to everything there. And you can learn more about me. Again, it's the same on all the socials, mrgaryfox.com, on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, everywhere.
Gary Fox, thank you very much.
Connor, thank you so much.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Our team of qualified accountants leverage the power of cloud technology to automate your manual processes and cut the cost of your finance function in half. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a 5-star review. It really helps others to find the show. I'm your host, Connor Carney. Thanks for listening.